Hello, listeners. This is Krishna Raghavan, and you are listening to the CHRO Mindset Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the CHRO Mindset Podcast, where we bring you candid, thought-provoking conversations with top HR leaders and experts. And here's your host, Pulkit Joshi. Today, we have the privilege of hosting Krishna Raghavan. Krishna Raghavan was the Chief People Officer at Flipkart most recently. He and his team were responsible for designing and driving initiatives to attract and retain world-class talent, and of course, build competencies for workforce while also strengthening Flipkart's culture. Krishna took over the role at a crucial juncture for Flipkart to shape the organization's people charter for the long term. He laid out Flipkart's commitment to being inclusive, entrepreneurial, and sustainable while focusing on employee experience. Prior to his Chief People Officer role, Krishna has been the technology head for Flipkart's fulfillment and services and customer experience groups. In the course of his tenure at Flipkart, he also spearheaded the launch of the marketplace platform and has led multiple strategic technology initiatives for eCart. Aside from his strong technical expertise, he's also known to be a people's leader, a leader who brings with him the right blend of technical and people skills. He has built exemplary engineering teams from scratch with his intuitive people management and sound organizational planning. With a career spanning over two decades, Krishna is adept at managing cross-functional teams. He has worked across diverse geographies and work cultures and is known to be an active champion of driving a people-first culture in organizations. Krishna, thanks for taking out time to speak with us today and welcome to the CHRO Mindset Podcast.
Thank you so much, Pulkit. Great to be here.
Awesome. So let's get going with our very first question. If you could choose a fictional HR character from a movie or a TV show to join your team, who would it be and why?
Cool. This is a very interesting question to start off the conversation. I think I would choose Doctor Strange because Doctor Strange possesses these, you know, I would say higher order powers, magical powers. One of them includes mind reading, obviously. And I think as HR functionaries, the ability to be empathetic, ability to understand what the other side is feeling, experiencing, is a huge part or input into how we design people practices to deliver those superlative people experiences. So I think Dr. Strange would be somebody I would hire without a doubt.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And I love the trait that you picked up, the ability to understand people. Great choice there. Let's now get into this section where we're going to talk about, how your leadership journey has been in the HR world and otherwise as well. So talk to us one lesson you have learned from a mentor or a role model that has influenced your leadership approach.
Yeah, there have been several mentors through my career, but one that actually stands out for me is somebody I worked with very closely in my engineering career before I entered the world of HR.
Okay.
And what I actually saw in that leader particularly is humility, groundedness, and this ability to always keep the role ahead of himself. So I think servant leadership, as they call it now, is something that I feel very, very passionate about. And it's been something that I've tried to follow through my career thereafter.
Great. I suppose humility and servant leadership both are extremely crucial, especially in these times. And I totally agree with you on what made you pick him as your mentor. Okay, let's get going. And now we are going to get into talking about employee experience and design thinking, right? So very, very interesting field. A lot of people have a lot of questions around that. And I'm hoping that via these questions, you know, we'll be able to answer some of the doubts that people may have when it comes to applying design thinking to employee experience. So please talk to us in what ways the principles of design thinking be applied to enhance talent attraction and retention throughout the employee experience initiatives.
Yeah, it's a great area, Pulkit, to dive deeper into, and I'll try to do my best to see whether we can address some of the questions out there. First and foremost, I think design thinking talks about keeping the person at the center of all your design practices. And I think in the HR field, keeping the employee at the center, upstream, while you even strategize your practices in terms of whether it be culture, process, any other intervention that you're doing is going to be super important. So that's a very key, I would say, principle that you can actually transfer over into the HR world. Second is, if you think about employees, often we sweep everything with a fairly generic sort of a brush. But if you think of employees, they're not the same. Every employee, like a human being, is going through different life stages. There is an employee who's a returning mother. There's an employee who has become a manager for the first time in their career. So the second principle of design thinking, which is not only keeping the employee at the center, but secondly, defining personas, which are unique. And these personas have different expectations or needs. It's the second big, I would say, principle that can be carried over. Third is designing the success criteria upfront. When you're solving for a particular persona, and I gave the example of a returning mother, what are some of the needs and expectations? Clearly delineate all of these. And once you do that, can you transfer these over to use cases? And in your strategy design, are you making sure that you're addressing these use cases? And how do you know that you're successful at addressing these use cases? Are there clear, measurable criteria that you've defined upfront? So I think some of these principles in design thinking can beautifully actually transform the way we think about the world of HR, in fact.
Great thoughts there, Krishna. So let's now talk about how should one infuse design thinking principles into the ideation and execution phases of the HR strategies that one wants to create in pursuit of having a more human-centric approach.
Yeah. And I think the key phrase that you use, Pulkit, is the human-centric approach. Lots been said about that area as well. So continuing on the conversation that we had earlier, so once you define all of these personas upfront, you collect all the relevant data for each persona. Now, how do you do this? You actually talk to the employees in these personas. And it's very, very interesting to note that actually many organizations probably flounder at this step, which is, when you have COEs sitting within HR, are they deeply immersed in the problems faced by each of these personas? And I gave the example of, let's take an example of the new joiner. The new joiner in the organization, and as an example, I'll talk about it. The biggest need of this new joiner is actually, how can I be successful in this organization? Every organization has a certain microcosm of culture. It has a set of rules that at which it operates in, ways of working. Now, when we actually analyzed Flipkart as an example, we found that the biggest need for this new joiner was, what will it take for me to be successful and thriving in Flipkart? Now, if that becomes a need, how do you address that need clearly through your strategy? So we paid a lot of attention as an example. This use case or problem statement got mapped into an initiative on our strategic roadmap, which said we actually have to redo and rethink the way we do new joiner assimilation in our company, right? So that's how powerful it can be when you weave it into your strategy work itself. And this is very, very important right up front, rather than doing it downstream.
Great. That leads me to my next question. Walk us through some instance, while you have already given a view into the onboarding process, but please walk us through one more instance where design thinking not only influenced, but actually reshaped the traditional HR process for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd like to talk about the benefits space a bit. So when we were talking to different personas across Flipkart, one of the most, set of loud voices that emerged is, you know what, your benefits is comprehensive. It has a lot of options in terms of insurance and different types of opt-ins that you can do. But depending on my life stage, I have different needs. And I actually might be somebody who is a parent, a single parent. I might be somebody who wants to take care of their in-laws versus their own parents because of certain life reasons. So when we got these insights, we had to completely go back and rethink the way our benefits program is actually designed. And what actually mushroomed or gave birth to was this FlexBen program that we have, which is you can actually, using points, customize your entire benefits program of how you want it. And you spend the points the way you would want to spend it based on your life stage. And this was extremely well received by our employees wide and large. So it completely reshaped our thinking on how we should think about benefits.
Great, great example there. I wish we could have continued on design thinking and employee experience, but due to paucity of time, we have to move forward. The next topic that I'm going to cover is extremely crucial for all employers, especially in these times of talent war and the way, you know, companies are actually starving to get the best talent on board. And the topic that I'm going to talk about is employee value proposition and employer branding, which is extremely crucial. So my first question for you is, what strategies do you employ or one should employ to ensure the employer brand aligns with the company's values? I get to hear from a lot of HR leaders about this question, but would love to know your perspective as well, please.
No, thank you, Pulkit. Good segue into another important topic. So I think, let me take a step back. The first and foremost, every company out there on the planet has an origin story. The reason came into existence, right? And somewhere along the journey, most companies define what I call values. But when you think about values, values are nothing but the behaviors that we expect every employee in the company to actually demonstrate in order to meet this larger purpose. So values are not in isolation. And values are not transferable. I mean, you can't say company A's value should be the same as company B. Company A's purpose is very different from company B. So that's how values come into play. Now, the reason I'm talking about both purpose and values, because ultimately, your brand is actually an external persona and it's a manifestation of your values, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about it, how do your stakeholders even recall you? When you think about a brand like Apple, when you think about a brand, right, out there, like, let's take an example of Nirma as a brand, right? There are certain attributes or characteristics that immediately prop into your mind to describe this brand.
Yeah.
Now, if your employee brand doesn't resonate or is not synergistic with your values, you have a problem right there. Because essentially, all your stakeholders, be it customers, be it sellers, be it your partners, be it your own employees, be it your alumni who actually worked with you and left, all of them, to a large part, should recall you through those values. If you have, for instance, audacity as a value, then all these stakeholders ideally should describe you saying, you know what, I worked here, it's an audacious company, right?
Yeah.
When your EVP speaks to your values and it's resonant with your values, your brand becomes extremely powerful. And then you can use the EVP to actually be as a constant communication vehicle, irrespective of who you're talking to. You could be talking to another brand, a partner, a seller, a customer. It doesn't matter. So that's how I think about building a very strong brand backed by a true and honest EVP. That's very important.
Very true. Very true. And being a marketer, I totally agree with a lot of points that you said. And one thing that I've observed is that this is one area where the CMO and the CHRO both need to come together. Both teams need to come together and ensure that there is proper fusion between how, you know, what the brand identity is and or the brand DNA, as they say, is, and how is the culture going to shape up, because it's the yin and the yang, right? Both are interconnected. You can't have either of these in isolation. Okay, let's continue with this exciting topic. And now I'm going to look at, we've talked about all this, right? But let's not talk about where the rubber hits the road. And what I'm getting to is, how should one measure the success and effectiveness of the current EVP program?
Yeah. So we talked about it briefly through the description of how brand EVP come together. If I were to look at the efficacy of an EVP, I would actually measure it based on, does it deliver actual business outcomes for you, depending on the stakeholder that you're talking about? Let me actually elaborate through an example.
Sure.
So if you're talking about, let's take an example of the prospect candidate that was looking to join your company. Now, through the EVP, you're talking to this candidate and you're delivering a certain brand, I would say, recall to this particular candidate on the reason why they should join your company. Now, one being said, you can deliver all this communication, you can do all the outbound communication, but end of the day, rubber hits the road, as you described it, when it's actually having a positive impact on your metrics.
Yeah.
Can you look at a before and an after, after your EVP came alive? Does it improve your time to fill? Does it improve your candidate NPS, the NPS experienced by the candidate while they interview with your company? Do they recommend you to their friends to actually come in and interview? Irrespective, by the way, of whether they got accepted or they got actually declined for the position at the company. So quantifying and making sure that, that there's a before and after your EVP launch, and is it contributing to the positive movement of these metrics is one angle I would look at, and I would actually replicate this across every cohort, every persona that I'm actually speaking to.
Great, great. I love that funnel approach. I think that sort of gives a very good view of how effectiveness things are. Okay, let's now segue into another important section. I'm going to be talking about employee engagement and retention. Because onboarding folks is easy, but I think the most tough part is to really be able to engage them and then retain them. So please talk to us. What is your perspective on the connection between employee engagement and overall business performance?
Pulkit, this is probably one of those areas where there's tremendous amount of literature on, right? And it's almost... I would say now completely a truth which is undeniable, which is the fact that happier employees lead to happier customers, right? And this is not just a hollow case. This is actually in companies, and I'll talk about the examples at least at Flipkart, where we saw that higher engaged employees essentially, right? And we did not measure employee experience once a year. We had something called a continuous listening, which we actually employed at any point in time to actually look at employee voice. And when we looked at moods and sentiments of employees in a particular function, in a particular group, we could actually correlate this very strongly as one of the biggest leading factors to employee disengagement and therefore attrition. And therefore, some of the metrics that it directly actually impacted is your top talent attrition, is your overall attrition, is your diversity attrition. All of these metrics could actually, you can walk back and say, how engaged were these employees? Now, that's from an employee lens. And that has clear, obviously, business impact, right? Because if you have a leaky bucket in a particular team or function, you know, there is tremendous cost that you're actually putting on the business in order for you to deliver those outcomes. I would also go on to say that in the groups that we saw higher employee engagement, the business performance metrics actually outperformed as compared to those groups that had lower engagement metrics, right? Okay. And I'm talking about actual business performance. I'm talking about top line. I'm talking about bottom line.
Yeah.
And to actually correlate this. So it's completely well established that greater engagement leads to greater positive outcomes, no matter which business you're operating.
Okay, very true. Very true. And I think that somewhere I can draw some analogy between even sports teams, right? I think just came to my mind, right? I've seen top performing sports teams, you know, they're very engaged bunch of people. So yeah, I know there's a lot of empirical data behind what you just said. But let's now segue into another question related to the same topic. So how should, and this is being talked about quite a lot, please walk us through How should one address the balance between professional growth opportunities and work-life balance?
Great question again, Pulkit. So I think one of the biggest insights that we learned at Flipkart was the fact that one of the biggest drivers of engagement, if I were to tackle it, you know, compensation, all of those things are there.
Yeah.
But the higher order problem to solve is the sense of belonging, right? Do I feel a sense of belonging? Now, if I feel a sense of belonging, one of the reasons that will help that cause is, can I build a long-term career in this organization?
Mm.
And therefore, am I learning every day? Am I upskilling myself? Am I cross-skilling myself? Right?
Mm.
Now, that brings me to the question of how do you actually ensure that you provide all of these opportunities to employees, but at the same time, you ensure a good work-life integration in the process? I think the answer for me at least lies in the fact, empower the employee to no end. Give the employee the choice, right?
Mm.
When we thought about careers at Flipkart, careers we defined as employee-owned, manager-facilitated, and organization-supported. All these words were thoughtfully actually put in. Employee has to own their career. You cannot tell the employee, by the way, you can provide coaching, mentorship, you can provide projects, experiences, all the tools of the trade you can. But at the end of the day, if as an organization, you push the agenda towards the employee saying this, you shall do this, it won't work. Because then it seems that it's coming at the cost of something else. But if as an employee, I make the choice, I have all the information, intelligence that is being given to me by my manager, the organization, all the tools of the trade, but I have to make the choice. So all our programs, for instance, at Flipkart, were actually designed to be opt-in programs.
Mm.
They are not programs that we say, you should do this, right? So I think that is, I feel that is the secret sauce to unlocking this aspect of, you know what, we want employees to grow in their careers, but it should not come at their cost of their work-life balance. By giving them the choice, you actually completely, I would say, give them the freedom to make this choice.
Okay, great thoughts there. And I think somewhere I can relate it to the intrinsic-extrinsic motivation theory, right? And somewhere I think it's the ownership certainly lies with the employees, because if they have a purpose in life, you know, or they want to have a fulfilling, you know, work-life environment, then it is very important that they themselves drive it. There's only so much that the organization can do. The organization can enable them, but at the end of the day, it's going to be them who are going to really create magic. And like you said, right, even from a design thinking perspective, not at every stage in life, one would probably go through the same emotion, right? So somewhere one has to sort of manage both ends. Okay, let's get going. And this is the last section of this wonderful discussion. And it's a topic that everybody is talking about, right? It's the talk of the town, as they say. And we are going to be talking about generative AI, right? So please walk us through how can generative AI assist in identifying potential skill gaps within an organization? I'm super sure this is, you know, causing a lot of headaches, both at HR end and also at people who are trying to train, you know, all the employees on the floor. So, yeah, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Pulkit, I'll talk about a very, very concrete use case, and that probably helps listeners to understand this a bit better. So, the problem for us at Flipkart was, how do you actually think about designing a talent marketplace that uniquely identifies an employee's aspiration once defined, once an employee defines their aspiration? How do you actually surface relevant content, experiences, jobs, and things, skills that need to be actually acquired in order for the employee to make this transition? So as an example, if I'm somebody who's an engineer, a software engineer, wants to become a data scientist, and I've established this and actually declared this in a particular space, I think generative AI can really come to the party in terms of identifying the requisite skill gaps, because it has these large language models, so to speak, right, around skilling. For instance, the repository of data on what do typically data scientists' competencies look like? How have other people made this transition in the past? What is the typical career trajectory that they take on? What are the sorts of experiences that they should actually gravitate towards, right? Instead of this becoming something which is manually curated and fed in by the learning and development team of an organization, based on their own journey insights, this actually could be generated through generative AI, if you think about it, right? And I gave it one use case. This use case can actually be replicated across multiple other use cases for the broader meta case of career transitions.
Awesome. I love that use case that you spoke of. And I agree, there are so many of them. I think this conversation is never going to end when we speak of, you know, using generative AI in the HR function, not just HR, across the board, all functions. It's actually disruptive in true sense. That's how I see it. Okay, that brings me to the last question. Krishna, you have been very, very patient and very, very detailed in how you've answered a lot of these questions, very practical insights. I wish we could have gone on and on. But let's now talk about any piece of literature or any book that has shaped your leadership journey.
Yeah, there's one book that I absolutely love talking about repeatedly. There are many books, but this one stands out for me in my professional journey in particular. I think Good to Great by James Collins.
Yeah.
I think the book so aptly describes different case studies and also doesn't look at just one dimension, you know. It talks about aspects around business strategy, leadership, culture, you know, building teams. And this entire spectrum, I would say, is so diverse and it has so much of depth that you can apply that to any company at any particular stage. And in particular, companies that are making that leap from have found a product market fit, but now are looking to become sustainable for the long term, not sustainable just from an environment lens, but all lenses. And what does it take to build those long-lasting, great companies, so to speak, right? I think there's so much of, I would say, magic in that book in terms of what can apply.
No, he's a legend, Jim Collins. I read his book, Great by Choice, as well. Yes, amazing authority on this subject, and absolutely a lot of case studies and whatnot really pick up from that book. Okay, I think this is the end of this super fantastic discussion that we had this morning. Thank you so very much, Krishna, for taking our time to speak with us and allowing our listeners to get a glimpse of what it takes to build, you know, great organizations like Flipkart, both from people and technology perspective, and especially the use cases that you spoke of were really awesome. Something I have not gotten a glimpse into prior to this. But again, thanks a lot for taking our time, and thanks a lot for all the wisdom that you shared with us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Pulkit. It was great talking to you today.
Great. Thank you. To all our listeners, thank you for joining us today on this podcast episode. I'm hoping and I'm super confident that you would have gained a lot of insights from what Krishna had to say on a variety of topics that are of extreme importance to all HR leaders in these times. Please continue to follow us, and we appreciate you joining us today on this podcast of The CHRO Mindset. Thanks for listening to The CHRO Mindset podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe and leave us a review. Join us next week for another insightful conversation with a top HR leader. And if you have any questions or feedback, reach out to us on social media or via email. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.